Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of Locked On Wolves. My name is Zachary Bennett, host, producer of the program. The Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Let's just get right to the point. In preparation for tonight's game against the New York Knicks, taking place at Target Center, 7 p.m. local time, 8 o'clock if you're out east. Jared Dubin, who hosts the Locked On Knicks podcast, he's also a contributor to Vice Sports, has a role over at Fansided's The Step Back. If you're an NBA head and follow basketball and read content written, spoken on the internet, you've for sure come across Jared Dubin. On Twitter, you can find him at J-A-D-U-B-I-N 5. Gives you a little bit of everything, basketball, football. I know he's a Cowboys fan, so for you Vikings fans, is somebody whose opinions you might not necessarily agree with and or like, but... Without further ado, Jared and I had a conversation. We recorded it. You can listen to it. You can listen to it right now. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the conversation between Jared and I. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Zach, how's it going, man? How are you?
It's going somewhere, Jared. I'm not bad. How about yourself?
I'm not bad as well. I think that's a pretty good way to describe it. Interesting fact that I just pulled out of the top of my head here. Both teams coming into this game having lost back-to-back games. In need of a win pretty badly. The Knicks had won three in a row before those back-to-back wins, and five of six, while the Wolves are in like a little bit of a spin right now over the last couple weeks or so. Do you feel like that is... the record reflects how they've been playing, or have they been playing better than that, you know, five losses in the last six games and seven in the last 10?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer. I think through a majority of the losses, they've played really well. But when you play really poorly for stretches of times, i.e. during third quarters or throughout the entirety of second halves, it's hard to say that you deserve to have a better record when you play so poorly during portions of games that you lose. So I think it's a pretty good indication of where they're at. They're still, you know, they haven't really established a lot of intricate philosophies defensively. Tibbs talks about all the time how they're still in pretty base stuff. So it's about accurate.
Yeah, and that defense has been sort of the big problem for them. 23rd in defensive efficiency. They're borderline, I think, or maybe even inside the top 10 in offense. Somewhat surprising given their shooting struggles over the last couple of years, and you would expect Tibbs to have made a bigger difference on defense than on offense, but that side of the ball is really where they've been struggling a lot.
Yeah, and they're the 29th, only the Kings are worse in defensive transition, so... It really is bizarre how, you know, Thibodeau takes over. You'd think the defense would pick up right away, but they've sort of left off where they were at last year as far as offensive efficiency goes. And with the increased three-point shooting and the more accurate three-point shooting, they're definitely adding more tools to their arsenal. I think on the defensive side, if you're looking at it on an optimistic outlook, they're playing in a way that's a little bit more conducive to winning. They just haven't put it all together yet, but they're, you know, at certain points during games, their rotations are sharper. You can tell that there's a plan there under Sam Mitchell that it wasn't so much the case. So it's just going to take time. And I don't think a lot of people accounted for the fact that you know, when you start playing differently, it takes a little time to transition into picking up the new habits that you're learning and that Tibbs is instilling.
Yeah, and that's something that I actually wrote about before the season with them, because you don't just go from like the bottom three in defense into the top five or top ten because you change the coach. You know, they learned a lot of bad habits over these last couple of years defensively, and there are some guys there that basically need to be taught defense almost from the ground up. You know, guys like Zach LaVine, that like you saw him last year and the year before, it wasn't just that he was bad and getting beat like physically, it was that he didn't know what he was doing. And when I talked to Tibbs earlier in the season for a piece that I did on LaVine specifically, he was like, yeah, you know, when it's one-on-one stuff, he has the physical tools to be able to handle that, but he still needs to learn rotations and where to be and when and why. And it seems like that's sort of a team-wide issue, not just with him. Even with guys that you would consider generally pretty good defenders, like Wiggins and Towns, they still need to learn much more what they're doing on that end in order for them to make that leap from the bottom up to the top.
Yeah, and it's compounded, too. Last year, you know, there were a lot of cases where, you know, valuing possessions is a big part of the problem, and last year they learned to value him a little better, I think, but under Flip Saunders, you know, before Towns came around, when they had Wiggins and LaVine was playing point guard, they didn't value possessions at all. I mean, the team was so bad that year, and they were content to be bad because obviously it worked out in their favor, but that was, you know, sort of the lowest of keys as far as tank jobs is concerned. And when you don't value possessions at all over that length of time, over an 82-game season, it's sort of hard to just turn on the focus, I imagine, and do it every single play as Thibodeau demands of his guys. So the bad habits thing is certainly, it's certainly having its impact now, but you know, over time, I think it'll get better. It's hard to imagine it not getting better with, you know, how focused the guys are. And
it almost has to get better too. Like, they can't stay down all the way at the bottom like this with the kind of athletes that they have and the coach that they have. Like, there's too much potential there in terms of, you know, the length and the limbs and the athleticism and the quickness. And then just, you know, a guy who, I mean, what he does is get guys to play better defense than they should based on their, you know, athletic profiles or knowledge of things. And eventually he'll get that working. But so far, seems like there are a lot of different ways that you could take advantage of that defensively.
Yeah, and you know, even just looking, so much emphasis is put on their second half numbers and how poor, you know, their net rating is just awful. It's just terrible to watch them in the second half. But when you look at them play in the first half, it's like, you know, what happens psychologically to you when you go into the locker room at halftime that all of a sudden you can come out and it's just a total flip of what we saw during the first half of games so often. So it's, yeah, it, like you said, it almost has to turn around because how could it not?
That third quarter stuff, like they're one of the best teams in the league in the first two quarters of the game. And then all of a sudden, like, in the third, they're the worst team by far. They're getting, like, I saw yesterday, they get outscored by 39 points per 100 possessions in the third quarter.
I don't know. It's a really unexplainable question as far as what do the Wolves do during the third quarters that, you know, what happens at halftime? Why do they play so poorly in the third quarters? Some of it, too, you have to credit opposing coaches. For instance, Quinn Snyder, when the Jazz were in town a couple of days ago, the Wolves on ball, you know, off ball pressuring, you know, Gordon Hayward, for example, they pressure him so much and they try to deny the ball. Well, it worked in the first half, and then all of a sudden the Jazz come out and they're scoring more on back cuts to the basket, taking advantage of that pressure and using it against the Wolves. So credit is due to opposing coaches and adjustments there. But as far as why the Wolves can't come out and perform well during first halves, I don't know. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. At this point, it's the same story over and over again. And in recent weeks, Thibs, Towns, all of them are basically sick of having to answer all of those type of types of questions. So it's just truly bizarre the way that works. But admittedly, I haven't spent a whole lot of time watching the Knicks. I tend to stick to the Western Conference, but they've seemed to be a fun team. I remember a couple, prior to the draft, the Towns Porzingis draft, everybody was just hating on Flip Saunders because he said that the Zinger was one of the most talented and all around best players available in the draft, and everybody knocked him. There was that whole cartoon. I don't know if you saw it, but pre-draft party, Flip's about to draft Towns, and he flips the script and drafts Porzingis. But he doesn't it doesn't look like too horrible of an opinion now, does it?
No, Flip looked pretty smart with a lot of the stuff he said and did late in his tenure, and unfortunately late in his life. Porzingis is unbelievable. Like, every game, it's like he does something that makes you just like stand up out of your seat and be like, how is it possible that a dude can do that?
Yeah.
And to relate it back actually to what we were just talking about with the adjustments, one of the big things that had been killing the Knicks over the first couple weeks of the season was that they were getting destroyed at the start of the second quarter and the start of the fourth quarter. And those have been their worst two quarters throughout the season. And so Jeff Hornacek, he made an adjustment, and he started taking Porzingis out earlier in the first quarter so he could get him back in to play with the second unit at the start of the second and fourth. And over the last couple of weeks, they've been much better in those stretches because of it. And especially in the second quarter, that's been a time where he's gone on some of his big runs. He did it against Detroit. He did it against the last game I was at, coming off the top of my head for some reason. He did it against Portland in the second quarter. So that's been something that was nice to see him make an adjustment where, like you said, the coaches have been making adjustments to Thibodeau, and now he probably needs to do something to get that edge back in the third quarter, whereas Hornacek has already, I think, made a nice adjustment in the second and fourth for the Knicks, which is something that's a little bit different about the two teams so far.
Totally. How is the, there was a lot of talk before the season, which is probably most time I spent paying attention to the Knicks, but the triangle dynamic, much was made about that. Are Hornacek's hands sort of tied based on what Phil supposedly wants to do with the triangle? I know.
I would say that if you can't count the number of times they run the triangle, like the pure triangle during the game on one hand, then you can definitely count it on two.
Oh, okay.
It's like maybe after timeouts or very rarely when they're just straight up in the half court, but more often than not, they are playing sort of like a hybrid spread kind of thing that still happens to have, two guards at the top a lot of the time, but they're not really running pure triangle actions out of it, or, they'll go into horns or even run guys off screens along the baseline. So it's not really been something that has been a big issue other than the one report early in the season that Phil was not all that happy that they weren't running it a lot. And since then, the only real mention of it has been the fact that they are not running it as much as people expected.
That makes sense. I'm sure there's a lot of, it seems to be with different offenses, with Adelman's corner offense, there are certain elements to it that are recycled and used, I'm sure, around the league and not just by the Knicks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what Hornacek runs a lot of the time looks a lot like what you see a lot of other places. It's not something that's all that new or unusual or anything like that. Like, it's very familiar.
At shoot-around earlier, they did reveal that it is it's not totally certain whether Joakim Noah will play tonight. That would be a factor. Does that mean more minutes for Kyle O'Quinn?
I would say it means potentially more minutes for Kyle O'Quinn or potentially more minutes for Billy Hernan Gomez, maybe both. What the Knicks have done is sort of given each of those guys a stint in the first half or early in the second half, depending on how things shake out, and let whoever is playing better be the guy that gets the minutes the rest of the way. I would imagine that O'Quinn will start and Hernan Gomez will come in for him fairly early, like whenever, maybe before Porzingis comes out, maybe after, depending on how they want to match up with things. But it's not necessarily going to be one or the other based on a pure plan. It's going to be whoever's playing better that gets more of the minutes, because that's basically how they've done it throughout the season so far.
Well, I'll tell you right now, based on what we've seen thus far in terms of bigs matching up against bigs, it feels like Tibbs tends to take away all of the fun. Usually, Gorgui Dieng guards the opposing big that you would like to see Towns guard, and I think everybody in the arena tonight and watching on television wants to see Porzingis versus Towns. But I'll tell all of your Knicks fan listeners right now that they may be disappointed.
Yeah, I would say that it's possible that KP guards Towns, just based on, like, you can't have O'Quinn or Hernan Gomez guard him, realistically. But I would not be surprised if Towns didn't guard him on the other end. That's what we saw last year when they matched up. But really the only time they guarded each other was when the Knicks went small with KP at center, which I feel like might be the case tonight as well.
Yeah, Hornacek talked about that at Shoot-Around, but he was very ambiguous on what he would want to do, and rightfully so. Strategically, that would not be advantageous for him to reveal that type of information. But I do agree that them going small is something that seems very possible.
Yeah, they tend to just match up to the other team a lot of the time. It's something I talked about with Fred Katz, both before and after the Knicks played the Thunder. So I feel like if Tibbs stays big, that makes it a pretty good bet that the Knicks will stay big also, unless O'Quinn and Hernan Gomez are both really not bringing it at all, or if they get foul trouble or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised if they stayed big for a lot of the night, even though in some past games, they have gone small with Noah hurt, just because, you know, that's dictated by not having another big guy available.
Well, I mean, the Knicks are 8-9; they're 10th in the East. What are some fair expectations for them the rest of the way? Do you anticipate a push for the playoffs, or is what they've done so far is it unsustainable, and do you think a tailspin is imminent?
I don't think a tailspin is necessarily imminent. Like, they've really only gotten blown out, I think, twice. The first one was opening night in Cleveland on rim night, which is not really a situation where you're going to have a lot of success. And the second one was the second half was back-to-back in Washington, and it was at least the third game in four nights. It may have been the fourth and fifth nights. I can't remember off the top of my head. But John Wall really just ate them alive in that game. Other than that, they've pretty much been competitive basically every night. Even in the games where they wound up losing by double digits, they were competitive for the most part. And they've beaten some good teams, too. You know, they beat Portland. They beat Memphis earlier in the season. They also got blown out by Houston early on in the year. That was not a good game for them. But other than that, it's not like they have to be competitive. So I wouldn't say that they're on the verge of, like, disaster anytime soon, unless, like, Carmelo or Kristaps gets injured, which, I mean, any team that loses their best or second-best player is probably due for a tailspin pretty soon. I want to ask you actually the opposite question about the Wolves, because, you know, they have a 5-12 record, but they've been competitive in a lot of games. Their point differential is significantly better than their record. Some of that has to do with a 36-point win earlier in the season.
Yep.
Against the Grizzlies, when they didn't have Conley, Gasol, or Parsons, But, I mean, it does seem like they're a team that's pretty clearly better than its record. So do you expect better things on the horizon, or are they going to continue struggling as long as the defense stays like it is?
Well, in the immediate future, it's tough to tell, and it'll reveal a lot about where this team is at and where it's going. I mean, if you assume a split with these next two matchups against New York, after that, they're at Charlotte, they're at home against San Antonio, they're at Toronto, they're at home against Detroit, which in theory could be a winnable game, but you just never know. And then they host Golden State, and then they're at Chicago, home against Houston. So it's... they could play really well over their next stretch of 10 or 15 games and end up losing more than they win, and despite playing very well. So it'll reveal a lot about where the team is at. You know, could they figure out how to win and figure out their third quarter and second half? Well, your guess is as good as mine. But I think ultimately, especially later in the season, there's a better chance of them, you know, starting to figure things out. You know, if they end up playing really well in this upcoming stretch, but losing more than they win, and you know, some of the preseason hype and expectations sort of dissipates late in the year. If they start playing, for lack of a better term, pressure-free basketball, they could start playing really well. But you know, late in the year, they play a lot of road games. They finish up with a lot of road games, so it's tough to tell. And in the West, every single night it's a daunting task, it feels like, but I'm gonna hold off on any sort of, you know, I think they can still compete for the playoffs. Definitely, I'm not gonna rule it out yet. But in December, historically, as Wolves fans would tell you, it's December, late December, early January is when you can sort of write them off as far as playoff contenders go.
Yeah, I mean the Knicks are in the midst of a stretch where I said beforehand that it was important for them to make up ground, and they did a really good job. Beginning of that stretch, they had before they go on their five-game West Coast trip, which starts December 9th. Starting in mid-November, they had 9 home games in their next 13, and they won the first 5 of those home games, sandwiched around that loss to Washington, where they really got blown out, but staged like a classic Knicks fake comeback at the end of the game. So they had won 5 out of 6. Including all 5 at home. Then they lost at Charlotte in a really good game on the second half of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
But they had done a good job making up a bunch of ground, and then they lost the other night to OKC at home. Now they're in, you know, the tail end of that stretch where they have this visit to Minnesota, and then they play, obviously, against them at home again on Friday. Then they get the Kings at home on Sunday. Then they visit Miami and have the Cavs at home, and that's before they go on their 5-game West Coast swing. So, you know, they really need to get, obviously, both of those wins at home and at least one of the 2 road games, because that Cleveland game, I don't care where it is, they are not expected to win it. Like, obviously, it would be great if they could, and I think it's possible, given how well the Knicks have played at the Garden, that they could manage to steal it. But it's certainly more likely than not that they lose. So these next 4 before that game and before the start of their road trip, they really need to go 3-1 or better if they can. And obviously that starts with trying to pull off 2 at Minnesota and then at home against Minnesota. I feel much better about them getting the win at home. You know, they've been significantly better there. They're 7-3 at home and only 1-6 on the road. And I know it's been tough sledding on the road for the Wolves. So
yep.
I would imagine the Knicks feel pretty good about that home game on Friday. It's just a matter of trying to steal this game tonight.
Yeah, the Wolves are something like 2-7 on the road with victories over the most recent victory over Phoenix, and that game was odd because Phoenix had the lead for 3 quarters, and then Tibbs brings in the closer, Tyus Jones. It's been funny because he's using his point guards like an MLB manager would use pitchers. He hopes to get 5-6 innings out of Rubio. He has Dunn coming in there for setup man, and then he's been using Tyus Jones to close. It hasn't always worked, but it's sort of what he does. At the end of games, the Wolf spacing is just so much better, and he'll revert to having Wiggins running the pick and roll and bringing up the point and initiating offense. So Tyus has worked much better in, as far as a spacing tool in that regard. But you might have more insight into what goes into the scheduler's mind at the beginning of the season. But going over reviewing the Knicks schedule, it's like a home road back to back against Charlotte. That win was an incredibly fun game to watch. I caught it on NBA TV after they had lost to the Hornets on the road. It just seems almost criminal that they had to play a game the night after that. And then, the Wolves with the road home, and later they have a similar situation with the Bucks. So I don't know what goes on in the schedule committee's heads when they do something like this. It's not.
They have a November home and home. They've had a November home and home with Charlotte. I'm pretty sure each of the last 3 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. Last year, that was the game where Porzingis hit a game winner. It was in Charlotte, but it came like less than half a second after the buzzer. And so they wound up losing that game. It was sort of like on a broken play. And if the pass had been half a foot higher, the shot would have counted. But he just had to go too far to raise the ball up in the air, so it didn't count. I think they've split it that home and home all 3 years. So I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head. This one with Minnesota and the one with Milwaukee later, though, are home and homes with a day off in between, which is not something you necessarily see very often. Before we go, though, I do want to get to the Carmelo and Wiggins matchup, because
that would be fun to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be. I think it's going to be very fun, and I think it's going to be interesting on both sides, because Carmelo has not been good defensively this year, and Wiggins has basically gotten wherever he wanted off the dribble, especially, and is just like a parading to the free throw line night after night, but is not necessarily doing much creating. And Carmelo, it's basically been like hit or miss night after night, based on he had one game against MKG where he made like every shot with MKG right inside his body all night, and then the next night he came out and same kind of game and he couldn't make them, and then the other night he couldn't make them against Robertson. Wiggins' defense, I think, has gotten to the point where it's a little bit overrated, but I do think he does a nice job of like staying inside his net. So that'll be interesting to watch to see how that matchup plays out on that side. And then, one of the easiest things this year has been to lose Carmelo coming off of, like, a curl screen into the paint. Like, Otto Porter beat him off it three times in one game. Bo Harkless beat him off it a few times. Excuse me. A couple guys earlier in the season, Tobias Harris, did a pretty good job working that. Gordon Hayward. So I'm curious to see both sides how that looks.
Yeah, and what was weird about the Utah matchup is Wiggins didn't take any free throws, which totally bizarre. Some of that, I think, is the Gobert effect, in that he would deter attempts driving the lane and things like that. And when you look at the Wiggins-Mello matchup, it's almost always will the Wolves try to use Wiggins in post-up situations. The Wolves are actually one of the best offensive teams in post-up situations, is as far as points per possession are concerned, and in large part because of Andrew Wiggins. But it's not advantageous to have him post up against Carmelo, I don't think, because Melo is almost bigger from a size advantage standpoint.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And conversely, if you look at it from an offensive standpoint, if you're the Knicks, you can post up. Melo is so effective at the four, and we talked earlier about them potentially going small tonight and probably going small tonight, and that would likely land Carmelo at the four, I would imagine. And if Wiggins has to guard him in post-up situations, I don't like that matchup for him. I think he's a much better face-up defender and defending on the perimeter and things like that. And I do think you make a fair point that his defense has sort of gotten overrated because of his, it was a heralded trait of his coming into the draft. But, I definitely think Melo, he's just such a polished offensive player. He remains one of the most polished offensive players in the league, and it's a nightmare for everybody, especially Wiggins. But I definitely think Melo, if he can hold his own defensively, that the Knicks would have the advantage in that matchup tonight.
And one of the things that I've noticed with Carmelo throughout this year is that when he gets a bigger guy on him, he can use his quickness to go by. When he gets a smaller guy on him, he can post him up and sort of bully him a little bit. It's the guys that are like the exact same size as him that he's struggled with, like MKG and like Robertson the other night. Wiggins, I would think that Carmelo probably has 20 pounds on him.
Yeah.
Do it. So I think this could be a good matchup for him, even if Wiggins, like, he does have those long arms, but I'm not sure that he's going to be able to withstand that, like, when Melo gets the ball on that right block and he just gives you a very subtle bump, it's almost like with his butt, not his shoulder, and he just gets you to back off like a half foot, and then before you can even get your hand up, he's already taking that turnaround fadeaway on baseline. That's something that I feel like could work really well for him against Wiggins.
Yeah, Melo, he's scoring 0.93 points per possession in post-up situations. Good, 59th percentile, good, but shooting 45%. And he definitely does have the size on Wiggins. That's another thing that people need to take into account with their overall perspective of the Wolves. They start three 21-year-olds. There's five teams since the turn of the century that have done that, and they're still very slender, Levine specifically, but Towns too. Gorgui Dieng is a little older, and he's beefed up every year he's been in the league, but he is he's small. He's inherently small. But it's the Knicks definitely have more adults that can take advantage of them physically. I think Courtney Lee is a great player. I don't know how that pickup has gone for the Knicks, but it's going to be an intriguing couple matchups over these next few days, and I would anticipate a split, but you never know with these teams. You know, the Wolves haven't won back-to-back games all year, so if the Wolves win tonight, they won't win in New York.
It's excuse me, sorry, I had some coffee. I would think probably a split too, just based on the Knicks like being really pretty bad for the most part on the road. Like the game they played against Chicago early in the season was a really good road game, and they played well against Toronto and Charlotte on the road. But in their other road games, they have not played well at all. They got blown out by Cleveland. They weren't good against Detroit. They were an embarrassment against Boston, and they were pretty bad against Washington as well on the road. So it's going to be tough for them, and it'll be. If they can pick up this win on the road, that would be a great step because they do need to start winning away from home. And then when they get home on Friday, I expect that they'll play much better. That's just been the way that it's gone. One last thing before we sign off here. Levine said this morning that, you know, if Kristaps is under the rim, he's going to try to dunk on him. Kristaps has said in the past he doesn't care who's coming at him at the rim. He's going to go up and try to block it. He's not going to try to, you know, fade away at all. So if those two guys go up there, you know, Levine has posterized plenty of players. Kristaps has stopped plenty of posterizations and been posterized by a couple guys as well. Who do you got when those guys are in the air coming down with it? Like, is that dunk going home and Kristaps getting put on a poster? Or is Levine going to get shut down for one of, like, the first times?
I think it's likely that they both disappear into an alternate dimension if that happens. And then we never actually see the result. So that would be an awesome turn of events. We would be talking about those. But no, I think Porzingis, I think he has every chance in the world of blocking him. But Levine, that's just the confidence he carries himself. That's just the confidence he carries. There's just an uncanny, like he's utterly confident, but in a way that's almost smooth. Like if you met him in high school, you would call him the cockiest person in the entire planet. So he's gonna go up and he's gonna try to dunk on anybody under the rim. I think that's what he meant by that comment. But
100% what he meant.
Yeah. So it's I'll take Levine just because I'll take the homer perspective. But I would be just as entertained if the zinger were to block him. I just hope both of them stay healthy, honestly.
Yeah, honestly, I'll say that if it's during tonight's game, Levine will throw it down. And if it's during Friday's
game,
Kristaps will block him. That's the cop-out that I'm going to take there.
That was a much smoother cop-out than I had. But, hey, At least the Knicks, I think, will bring fans into attendance at Target Center. The Wolves, they're the worst. They have the worst home attendance in the league, which is criminal based on the team that they have. So,
it's interesting. My roommate is from Minnesota. He's a Wolves fan. We've actually got three games against each other in the next 3 days because we've got the two Knicks Wolves games, and then I'm a Cowboys fan, so we've got Cowboys Vikings tomorrow.
Oh, wow, wow!
So it's going to be an interesting 3 days in the apartment.
Well, he's probably not feeling too good about the Vikings' chances.
He actually texted me this morning and he said, "I'll bet you we go 3-0."
Oh my goodness! Wow. Well, hey, you never know. That double A gap pressure might get to the Cowboys. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I feel pretty confident in the interior of the Cowboys' offensive line being able to handle pressure. If they can break some over Doug Free, then that's where they get into a little bit of trouble.
Well, awesome. Awesome, Jared. I'm glad you coordinated this today. This has been a fun conversation. We might have to do it again over the course of the next few days.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll speak to you then and enjoy watching the game.
All right, man. You too.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.